Good morning, everyone. I actually have some handouts today. So I have some handouts, some texts that are coming around about the Book of Ruth and also how the Book of Ruth addresses some of the other texts that we have and how it helps to answer and in some ways redeem some of the other texts and stories that we have. Can I just ask, are folks familiar with the Book of Ruth? A little bit? Okay. Great. We'll take a look at the text that is the most famous from the Book of Ruth. But here's essentially the time period that the Book of Ruth comes from. It's about mid-400s BCE, during the Persian Empire. And in Jerusalem, we are amidst the third wave of people who are coming back from having been exiled to Babylon little more than 100 years ago. And as the temple is being rebuilt and as the walls of the city of Jerusalem are being rebuilt, there is a cultural revival. And a piece of what happens for that is they reach back to the text and they look at the text. And this is the first time so many of them have been able to sacrifice according to the way that the text tells us that we are supposed to sacrifice. And so they're keeping very close watch and understand what the ritual is because they want to do everything just right. And at the same time, what that means is that they are looking out into the community and they're also trying to both define and figure out the boundaries of what does it mean to be this people that is coming back. Again, this was over 100 years ago that they left. None of the same people who left have come back. So they're trying to understand, what does it mean to be us? What does it mean to be the people of Israel? And so we have this text from the book of Nehemiah. Let's see a little bit about the kinds of things that the leadership at the time were thinking and were talking about. Can I have a volunteer to read?
That's Nehemiah 13, 1 through 3 and 23 through 7, that part? Okay. At that time, they read to the people from the book of Moses, and it was found written that no Ammonite or Moabite might ever enter the congregation of God. Since they did not meet Israel with bread and water and hired Balaam against them to curse them, but our God turned the curse into a blessing. When they heard the teaching, they separated all the alien admixture from Israel. Also at that time, I saw that Jews had married Ammonite and Moabite women. A good number of their children spoke the language of Ashdod and the language of those various peoples and did not know how to speak Judean. I censored them, cursed them, flogged them, tore out their hair, and adjured them by God, saying, "You shall not give your daughters in marriage to their sons, or take any of their daughters for your sons, or for yourselves."
Whenever we talk about Israel in this context, we're talking about the people Israel. The region was called something very different, and in this case, they would have called it Judah. That's why they're talking about Judean specifically. So whenever we say Israel, we're talking about the people Israel, who we would now call Jews in general. They weren't super happy with the idea, right, of the kinds of things that people were doing, especially with intermarriage. Now, this is after the people had come back. Intermarriage would have been something that would have been very common. The people had gone and lived in a different region. But what they're trying to do is to have a kind of a reconnection with what they believe the past was and what they believe their tradition told them about who they should be and how they should behave. And so we have, and we won't read the Deuteronomy passage, but we have specifically in Nehemiah them quoting exactly what it says in Deuteronomy about not marrying Moabite and Ammonite women. So from the perspective of Nehemiah, when we're reading in the readings, when the readings quote the Torah, it's very exciting because they are demonstrating, right, that it is these same texts that we have been reading and have been studying and have been trying to understand and wrestle with for all of these years. So it's a kind of a sense of this great continuum. And so the book of Ruth knows this and sees this and has a different kind of a perspective, a different kind of an interpretation that it offers. We don't know who wrote the book of Ruth. Some might even argue it's a woman. There's no real evidence for that, except that as a woman, reading the book of Ruth. It is the most viable possibility, perhaps other than some poetry, that it could have been a woman. But there's no real evidence for that. The book of Ruth was written in 400s BCE, but it was supposed to have taken place many, many years before that. So it is set in about 1200 BCE, during the time of the Judges. So well before King Saul at this point. And it's a time of turmoil. We read in the book of Judges that it's war and terrible, and then a moment of peace, and then war, and everything's terrible, and then a moment of peace. It's this ongoing cycle. It's a difficult time period. And we have the author setting the story at that time and offering a different kind of a perspective about this tradition. The tradition, again, that Nehemiah says, it says we're never supposed to marry Moabites or Ammonites because they were awful to us. And here's the author of Ruth giving us a different perspective on what the tradition is. May I have another volunteer to read?
Thank you. Elimelech, thank you. Naomi's husband died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah, and the other Ruth, and they lived there about 10 years. Then those two, Mahalan and Chilion, okay, also died. So the women were left without her two sons and without her husband. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Turn back, each of you, to her mother's house. May the Eternal deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me." But Ruth replied, "Do not urge me to leave you, to turn back and not follow you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried." When Naomi say how determined she was to go with her, she ceased to argue with her, and the two went on until they reached Bethlehem.
So when we read this, right, the prior text told us about the Moabites and that they were not kind to the Israelites. But when we read this, what do we know? We learn something about this Moabite woman. And what is she? Maybe someone throw out a word or two. What would you say, what characterizes this person, Ruth, this Moabite? Faithfulness, what did you say? Samaritan.
Loyal.
She's a widow. She's in a precarious situation, but her mother-in-law in an even worse situation. Because at this point, right, having had two grown children who died, the chances that she will be able to remarry and have other children are not fantastic. And so she is in a difficult situation because in this world, she's very vulnerable and is at the mercy of society. Ruth is a step ahead of her because she might have the possibility to marry. But what Ruth does is connects herself to Naomi no matter what. And says, even if this makes my situation more difficult, she is loyal, she is caring, she is loving, and she wants to stay with her. Which is a very different kind of a picture of who Moabites are than what we have said in Deuteronomy, and therefore what is repeated in Nehemiah. And on top of it, in Ruth, it's not even a big deal that they married Moabites. Right, this again, if this was supposed to happen at 1200, this is even closer to when Moses actually gave the Torah. And yet, here we have them marrying, and nobody makes a big deal about it, even in this text, which is, again, a different picture of what the tradition is and what the history has been. And so we continue on with that in the same light of giving this beautiful picture of who this person is. For the sake of time, actually, we're going to skip the first 1 on the back page, but do read about it. And again, it talks more again about her loyalty and the fact that Boaz, who is ultimately the person that she is going to marry, recognizes this in her. And she even says, I'm a foreigner. Why are you being kind to me? And he says, because I've seen your loyalty. I've heard of the kind of person who you are. And again, that notion, that fact that she was a Moabite was not something that kept him from seeing who she really was. But the Ruth text helps to redeem a lot of what we have in the earlier texts. Ruth, it's important for us to recognize, is the great-grandmother of King David. King David, during the time of Nehemiah, is still heralded as, right, the most important figure in that it is his descendants who will ultimately reign again and bring a kind of redemption to everyone. And so the fact that she is the great-grandmother here is an important thing. An important thing because she helps to determine what the future will be. I want to look at the book of Genesis because, again, when we're talking about redemption of texts that came earlier, it's an important one to take a look at. And this is one from about Moabites. So I'll read. Genesis chapter 19. This is right after Sodom and Gomorrah had been destroyed. Lot went up from Zoar and settled in the hill country with his two daughters, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters lived in a cave. And the older one said to the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to consort with us in the way of all the world. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and let us lie with him, that we may maintain life through our father. That night they made their father drink wine, and the older one went in and lay with her father. He did not know when she lay down or when she rose. The next night also they made their father drink wine, and the younger one went and laid with him. He did not know when she lay down or when she rose. Thus the two daughters of Lot came to be with child by their father. The older one bore a son and named him Moab. He is the father of the Moabites today. And the younger also bore a son, and she called him Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites today. So that's the history, according right from the Israelite perspective, of who the Moabites were. Ruth, we talked about, is in this precarious situation. There's something in the ancient world called levirate marriage, by which if your husband dies before you have a son, you are entitled to marry the closest male relative. Most often that's a brother, but if there's not a brother, then that extends to other male relatives as well. There is a very explicit ritual that is in the Torah that says that if the brother does not want to fulfill this responsibility, that is considered shameful. He is allowed not to fulfill it, but he is branded with a kind of shame because it is a responsibility that you have to your brother and to your family. And so we have also a story in the book of Genesis of Judah and Tamar. And Judah had sons married to Tamar. One died. She married the next one. He died too. He's like, uh-uh, I am not giving you my third son because I'm worried about what's going to happen to him. Through a very, very long and dramatic kind of a story, ultimately Tamar demonstrates to Judah that he is in the wrong and that this is his responsibility and that this is what tradition says and he should have given her his last son to marry. So we have Ruth that's also in a similar situation. Her husband is dead. Her husband's brother is dead, but now they've come back to Bethlehem where there are other relatives. And so we have Ruth in a story that is very parallel, as you'll see, to the one that we see with Lot and his daughters. So Ruth, chapter 3. She went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had instructed her. Boaz, who was the one who was kind to her in the top text, ate and drank and in a cheerful mood went to lie down beside the grain pile. Then she went over stealthily and uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, the man gave a start and pulled back. There was a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. And she replied, I am your handmaid Ruth. Spread your robe over your handmaid, for you are a redeeming kinsman. He exclaimed, be blessed of the eternal daughter. Your latest deed of loyalty is greater than the first, in that you have not turned to younger men, whether rich or poor. Somebody tell me, what are the parallels between this story and the Lot story? What pieces are parallel? Drunkenness, right? Who's drunk? the man in both cases, right? Lot was drunk. Okay. So, and when the woman came to the man, right, in both cases, the man didn't know, right? Was asleep and drunk and didn't necessarily know, right? In the Lot story, the daughters took advantage of that situation. And perhaps we can say, you know, it may have been for fear that they thought that the world was going to come to an end, that they thought that this was it. They were the last people. They just saw this, or they know that the Sodom and Gomorrah had been destroyed. But they took advantage of that situation and purposefully got him drunk for it. But what happens with Ruth? Ruth sits and waits. There's a sexual kind of a connotation or a reference, right? She uncovers his feet. So we can't say that it was, right? There's something that happens there specifically that is supposed to be symbolic, that she uncovers his feet. Perhaps as a way of saying she could have done all kinds of things. But she uncovers his feet and he waits, and she waits. And he doesn't know that she's there. And when he wakes up, he sees that she's there. And what could he have done at this point? All kinds of terrible things, but he doesn't. What he does then is he praises her, right? That she is now coming to him as someone who could redeem her, and he praises her. And in the end, right, they do wind up getting married. But what we have is everyone doing the right thing. What we have earlier is people taking advantage of each other. And what we have in Ruth is everyone doing the right thing. And the world, it's hard. It's difficult. Ruth is at the mercy of her dead husband's male relatives. Naomi is in a terrible situation. But what happens? Everybody does the right thing. They are kind, and they are loyal, and they are generous, and they are compassionate. And even when you look at the situations where people can take advantage and probably wouldn't even get in trouble for it, they don't do it. They take care of each other. The world of the book of Ruth is unjust and difficult and hard. And yet the story of Ruth is beautiful and kind and compassionate. And that's the message, that protest can take the form of kindness and compassion and love and generosity. That no matter the world that you're living in, no matter what Nehemiah says, no matter what the leadership tries to dictate, that you can still be kind and be compassionate, that you can create that kind of beauty, the beauty of the world that we want to live in, even when the world does not necessarily reflect what you want it to be. And I hope for each of us that when we think about the book of Ruth, then that we think about what that could mean for us, for each of us, and that every time we think about the injustice of the world that we live in, the harshness, how the vulnerable are taken advantage of and who are not supported and not cared for, that we remember that it is within us to do as Ruth and Boaz and Naomi do, to do as their community did, which was to do the right thing, regardless of the law, regardless of the words that you hear being echoed around you, that kindness and compassion and justice can live and can live through us. May we have the strength and the wisdom to find those opportunities for that kind of compassion. Amen.